The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, getting off this drug must be done slowly. I have been taking clonazepam for several years. I would love to get off of it. My doctor says to stay on it and it is safe. Another doctor I consulted said to get off it and that it's poison. My pharmacist said it's bad. I wouldn't put it in my mouth, quote unquote. I never understood why I was supposed to take it. Maybe it was to help lower my high blood pressure. Can you tell me how to get off of it? Answer. Clonazepam or Klonopin, K-L-O-N-O-P-I-N, is approved for treatment for treating epileptic seizures and panic attacks. So far as we know, it's not used in treating high blood pressure. This medication is benzodiazepine, like Xanax, Valium, and Ativan. It can cause physical dependence and should never be stopped suddenly. Since your doctor doesn't seem interested in helping you discontinue this drug, you may need to look for one who will. Patients are advised to reduce the dose incrementally, possibly over several months, to minimize the chance of withdrawal symptoms. The manufacturer recommends, quote, treatment should be discontinued gradually with a decrease of 0.125 milligram twice a day every 3 days until the drug is completely withdrawn, unquote. There are many medications better than anti-anxiety drugs for lowering blood pressure. Learn about them in our guide to blood pressure. Question. My mother had diabetes, and I want to avoid it. I am motivated to keep my blood sugar under control. My doctor suggested continuous glucose monitor so I can track how my diet affects blood sugar. I really like being able to track it without finger sticks. It has taught me to eat sensibly. Answer. A continuous glucose monitor is a wearable device that detects blood sugar levels every few minutes. The patch is applied to the arm and can be worn for up to 2 weeks. Having the device communicate readings to a monitor or a smartphone can make the information more accessible and make it easier to figure out what to eat or avoid. Will MSM help grow fuller, thicker hair? Question. Years ago, I read in your column that MSM supplements without glucosamine helped hair stay full and thick. I started taking it about 2002, and I have pretty thick, healthy hair at age 57. I definitely saw an improvement in my hair within a few months of starting the supplement. Thank you for your good advice. A. Answer. MSM stands for methyl sulfonylmethane. It is a natural occurring compound with well-established anti-inflammatory activity. A review of the medical literature concludes that MSM can ease the pain and stiffness of arthritis, and that's cited in Nutrients, March 2017. Although there is some preliminary research to suggest that this dietary supplement may be helpful for skin quality and hair and texture, we could find no data to support its benefits for improving hair growth in humans. Some people speculate that MSM can be beneficial for hair health because it is a good source of sulfur. Fortunately, MSM appears to be well tolerated with a good safety profile, and that's cited in Complementary Therapies in Medicine, August 2019. Question. I have been sick for about 7 weeks. Blood tests show liver failure, although I never drank. Repeat tests 3 weeks later showed normal labs. The liver doctor I saw insisted that the elevated liver enzymes were from taking supplements, although I assured him several times that I don't take supplements. I do use a few spices and herb teas, mostly grown in my own garden. I use fresh ginger and fresh turmeric, some of which I grow. The liver specialist said I must never use any supplement and never any spice or herb tea because it is not regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. He overlooked the fact that for several years I took drugs that were dangerous. Some were recalled, like Hisminol. I took Valsartan for several years before learning it contained a carcinogen. So does Zantac. Answer. We are so sorry to hear that you have been ill. The liver doctor is no doubt aware that a few herbal supplements such as kava extract, black cohosh, green tea extract, and germander can be harmful to the liver, and that's cited in Food and Chemical Toxicology, September 2017. On the other hand, as you point out, there are hundreds of drugs that cause liver injury, cited in Expert of Gastroenterology and Hepatology, January 2018. We encourage you to monitor your liver function periodically to make sure the abnormal test results were an anomaly. The Harvard Health Letter. Preventing seasonal maladies. A weaker immune system and increased germ exposure make us vulnerable to winter bugs. Here's what you need to know. Winter is on the way. And along with cold temperatures, the season brings a spectrum of potential health problems for everyone, especially for older adults. That's why it's important to take precautions now before you get sick. The cold weather link. Cold weather doesn't cause illness, but it may foster it. Some studies have found that both cold and flu viruses can multiply and spread more easily in lower temperatures and humidity. Additionally, cold air reduces blood flow to the lining of the nose, throat, and lungs, which may dampen the immune system response, says Dr. Craig Jones, who is an ear, nose, and throat specialist with Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts Eye and Ear. But what really triggers so much illness during the winter is increased exposure to germs. Cold temperatures drive people indoors. If you're in a store with people clustered around, and less air circulating, it's easier to catch bugs because everyone's in closer proximity, explains Dr. Suzanne Salomon, a geriatrician with Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. A disadvantage. To make matters worse, older adults are especially susceptible to getting sick. That's partly because the immune system gets a little weaker as we get older. Also, as we get older, we tend to get other conditions like arthritis that compete for the attention and energy of the immune system, distracting it from fighting an infection. What you're up against. There are many kinds of winter illnesses. Here are some of the usual culprits. The common cold or viral rhinitis can be caused by more than 200 viruses. Symptoms come on gradually and can include a sore throat, nose, and sinus congestion, thick and sometimes discolored discharge, a runny nose, sneezing, a cough, or hoarseness. Sinusitis is an infection that can be caused by cold viruses or bacteria. The sinus lining swells, blocking mucus from draining. Symptoms include pressure, pain in the cheeks, over the eyes, nasal congestion, thick yellow or green discharge, a diminished sense of smell, fever, headache, and fatigue. Bronchitis is an inflammation of the lining of the bronchial tubes, the hollow air passages that connect the windpipe to the lungs. Viruses cause most cases of acute or short-term bronchitis, although bacteria also can cause the condition. Symptoms include tightness in the chest and a cough that produces phlegm. Pneumonia is inflammation deep in the lungs affecting the small air sacs and nearby tissue. Both viruses and bacteria can cause the condition. Symptoms include fever, chills, a cough producing phlegm, labored breathing, and sometimes pain in the chest when you breathe in deeply. But the symptoms of pneumonia can be more subtle. Very frequently, older people are just confused or very tired, no cough or fever. Influenza or the flu is a very contagious and potentially deadly viral illness. Symptoms come on quickly and include fever, cough, sore throat, runny nose, muscle aches, fatigue, and sometimes vomiting and diarrhea. Stomach bugs or viruses, such as norovirus, which are contagious and cause vomiting and diarrhea for a few days. You can get sick from an infected person or by eating, drinking, or touching something with the virus on it. Prevention. To avoid winter illnesses, you'll have to take extra precautions. Get a flu shot. Make sure you've had the pneumococcal vaccine if you're 65 or older. And wash your hands before eating or touching your eyes, nose, or mouth. Carry hand sanitizer when you travel. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. For most common illnesses, waiting 2 weeks after the person became infected is enough time to reduce the risk of catching the infection. For young kids who have the flu, it may be better to wait 3 weeks after the illness. On airplanes, direct the air vent toward your face as the air coming from the vent is filtered and will help to deflect any germs away from your nose. And stay away from shared food like potlucks during norovirus or winter season. What if you get sick? Take symptoms seriously and report them to your doctor if they're severe or they last a few days. For bacterial illness such as bacterial pneumonia or sinusitis, you'll need an antibiotic. For flu, you may be able to shorten its course and avoid serious complications with an antiviral medication like Tamiflu. But that's only if you begin treatment within 2 days after symptoms appear. Otherwise, there's little you can do for the flu or any virus like a cold but treat symptoms. How? Take lozenges for a sore throat, over-the-counter painkillers for body aches, and anti-diarrheals for diarrhea. For nasal congestion, you can use a nasal spray like Afrin, but not for longer than 3 days unless your doctor tells you to do so, as it can lead to increased nasal congestion beyond that. For excess mucus, use Mucinex. For sniffles, I recommend the antihistamine Claritin and a spray called Astilin, which helps with a runny nose without drowsiness. And for all winter bugs, try to rest and get lots of fluids so you can get better soon. Ask the Doctor by Dr. Anthony Kamaroff, MD, who's editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. How many steps should I take each day? My smartphone tells me how many steps I take each day, but I don't know how many I should shoot for. What should be my goal? Answer. You've read in these pages and elsewhere that regular physical activity reduces the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and possibly several types of cancer. Regular exercise also reduces the risk of premature death. No medicine yet invented can claim such benefits. Probably the advice you've heard most often is that moderate exercise, like a brisk walk at about 3 miles per hour for 30 minutes at least 5 times a week, will bring all the above health benefits. But you're asking a slightly different question. You're saying that smartphones and wearable devices may give us a tool for measuring how physically active we are, a count of the number of steps we take each day. Great, but what should our goal be? The best study of that question was published in May 2019 from colleagues here at Harvard Medical School. Before I tell you about the study, permit me a brief digression. Where does all this advice about healthy lifestyle come from? Some people imagine that a bunch of academic experts sit around a table and off the top of their heads decide what the answers should be. In fact, the advice we give is based on data, studies like the one I'm about to describe. The study gave nearly 17,000 older women, average age of 72, a device that counted every step during waking hours for 7 consecutive days. The number of people who died over the next 4 years was compared in 4 groups, each with an increasing average number of steps per day. 2,718 steps was the least active, 4,363 steps, 5,905 steps, and 8,442 steps, which was the most active. Rigorous statistical techniques were used to account for the influence of things besides activity level that might have affected the women's risk of dying, like disease they might have had. The conclusion, at about 7,500 steps per day, the risk of death was about 40% lower than for the least active group. Above 7,500 steps, there was not a clear additional benefit. Also, the vigorousness of the steps, like how fast one walked, did not seem to bring additional benefits. The study only involved women with an average age of 72, but I think it's reasonable to assume it also applies to men of that age. Based on this and other studies, what do I, as a man in my 70s, do? I am pretty good about doing moderate activity for 30 minutes at least 5 days a week. I consult my smartphone every day, and my goal is at least 7,500 steps per day. Until unless better data emerge, I'll advise the same for you. Is your CPAP machine making you sick? Bacteria and mold can accumulate in various packs of the device, but regular equipment cleaning reduces risks. Continuous positive airway pressure, or CPAP, can be hard to get used to. The mask may feel bulky, or it may feel strange to have air blowing in as you try to breathe. That keeps many people from using a treatment that may in fact be a lifesaver. People also can be put off because they've heard that a dirty CPAP machine can make you sick. Is that true? Yes, if you don't clean the machine regularly, says Dr. Lawrence Epstein, a sleep expert at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Germy CPAP systems. There are several ways you can get sick from a dirty CPAP machine. One is a dirty mask. The mask sits on the face in contact with organisms on the skin. Over time, bacteria and oils on a dirty mask may give you a rash or infection on the skin. Another risk, one mentioned in some TV commercials, has to do with the bugs you may breathe in from a dirty water reservoir in the air pump. The water is needed to put moisture in the air you breathe through the mask. Otherwise, the air would be too dry. But if the standing water in a reservoir isn't cleaned regularly, there is the potential for bacteria or mold to grow, which you could breathe in, Dr. Epstein points out. Breathing in these organisms can make you sick or increase problems related to conditions such as asthma, reactive airway disease, or other lung conditions. If you are frequently getting sick or your CPAP smells moldy, it could be a sign that the device is not clean. Cleaning your CPAP machine. The good news is that it's very unlikely you'll get sick from CPAP machine if you clean it regularly. Here's how. Number one, wash the mask, water chamber, and tubing in hot soapy water every morning. Make sure to submerge the tubing so that the water runs through it. Let all the parts air dry. Number two, once a week, wash the headgear and the filter and soak the water chamber in a little white vinegar to prevent mold growth. And finally, number three, if your machine has a disposable filter, change it every month. Sound like a lot of work? Two types of sanitizing systems on the market enable you to simply place the CPAP parts inside a machine, hit a button, and let the machine do the work. One uses activated oxygen or ozone to clean the CPAP device, the CPAP parts, and the other uses ultraviolet light. Dr. Epstein says they appear to work, but I am not aware of any comparative trials to say the machines are better than hand washing. The major advantage is convenience, which comes with a price of about $250 to $350 for a machine. Is it worth the money? Dr. Epstein leaves that answer up to you. But cleaning the machine, whether it's with a special gadget or old-fashioned elbow grease, is a must. What is CPAP? Continuous positive airway pressure, or CPAP, is one of the best treatments for people with obstructive sleep apnea, a condition that causes you to stop breathing periodically during sleep. The pauses in sleep occur when muscles in the throat relax so much that they block the airway. CPAP keeps your airway open. The CPAP system consists of a small bedside pump that pushes a forceful stream of air through a tube and into a mask you wear while you sleep. People who use it feel much more alert, awake, and productive because they no longer have their sleep disrupted 30 to 100 times per hour. CPAP is linked to many other benefits. It helps reverse the risks of sleep apnea, such as high blood pressure and an increased risk for heart disease and strokes, and weight gain. And a study published online June 13, 2019 by The Lancet suggested that using CPAP reduces depression symptoms in patients who have sleep apnea and cardiovascular disease. Anything that can improve sleep can improve mood. And if you treat sleep apnea, it improves mood as well. This is not the first study to demonstrate it, Dr. Epstein says, but this study shows that CPAP improves mood even in people with another serious health complication. An Older Adult's Guide to Exercising in Cold Weather. You've the proper warm-up equipment and health considerations are key to maintaining an outdoor routine. You've grabbed a hooded jacket, and you're ready for a brisk walk in the great outdoors. But is that enough to keep you safe in cooler temperatures? An outdoor exercise routine at this time of the year brings unique risks and benefits. You need a little planning and preparation to keep exercising outside in the weeks or months to come. Know the risks. Being exposed to long periods of cold weather poses numerous health risks. Heart strain. Temperatures at or below 59 degrees cause blood vessels to narrow, making it harder for the heart to pump blood throughout the body. When your heart is asked to work harder, it requires more oxygen and greater blood flow. If your arteries can't meet the demand because it's cold outside or because the arteries of your heart are narrowed, atherosclerosis or both could put a strain on your heart and cause a heart attack, explains Dr. Beth Freites, Director of Wellness Programming for the Stroke Research and Recovery Institute at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. Muscle injury. Narrowing of blood vessels caused by cold weather could keep your muscles from getting the oxygen they need to work properly and stay warm and flexible. That could lead to muscle strain or injury. Hypothermia. This condition occurs when the body loses heat faster than it can produce it, causing a dangerously low body temperature that can trigger a heart attack, kidney or liver damage, or worse. Older adults lose body heat faster than when they were younger, and they may not be aware of it, Dr. Freites says. Frostnip or frostbite. Exposure to severe cold leads to the freezing and injury of body tissue. Frostnip, when skin is red, swollen, and a little numb, hurts, but your body recovers when you warm up. Frostbite causes lasting damage. Falls. If the ground is icy and slick from freezing temperature, there's an increased risk for falling and suffering an injury like a hip fracture. Cold weather benefits. Despite the risks, exercising in cold temperatures does offer benefits that you don't get in warmer weather. For example, exercising in the sunlight can help people who have seasonal affective disorder, a type of depression triggered by decreased exposure to daylight. And some evidence suggests that exposure to cold weather may help activate brown fat cells, which are known to burn calories. Use these strategies. If you have any kind of cardiovascular, lung, or balance issues, check with your doctor before exercising outdoors in the cold and do it safely. Watch the weather. If it's extremely cold, rainy, snowy, or icy, exercise indoors. A good rule of thumb, skip your outdoor workout when the temperature drops below 32 degrees. Choose the right time of day. Try to exercise during the warmest part of the day, around lunchtime, when the sun is at its peak. Of course, this is something you should avoid during the summer. Protect skin, lips, and eyes. Even though it's cold outside, the sun still shines its powerful ultraviolet rays on us. Use a broad-spectrum sunscreen, one that protects you from both UVA and UVB rays, with a sun protection factor SPF of at least 30. Use lip balm with sunscreen as well to protect your lips from the sun. Wind and cold, remember to wear sunglasses. Bundle up. Dr. Freites recommends dressing in layers so you can be comfortable without getting overheated. Once you are going and moving your muscles, you'll get hotter. You may want to take off a layer and wrap it around your waist or put it in a small backpack. Avoid cotton and wear athletic clothing that wicks away moisture while keeping you warm. Don't forget a hat, gloves, and heavy socks. We lose a lot of heat through our head, arms, and hands, and legs and feet. Do the warm-up. No matter what the weather, a warm-up is crucial to help your body adjust to increased demands on the heart and to get blood and oxygen to the muscles. A fit young person can start with a sprint, but an older person is risking muscle injury and heart strain by doing that. Start exercising gradually, walk slowly, or march in place for 5 minutes. Work out for 20 minutes and then slow down for 5 minutes to cool down. Stay hydrated. You need to stay hydrated even when it's cold outside because you'll still sweat and lose fluid. Drink water before, during, and after your workout. One final strategy. Don't ignore your body's warning signs. Take it seriously if you're shivering, have chest pain or out of breath, or feel extremely fatigued, and call for help immediately. Meat-free diet linked to benefits for people with type 2 diabetes. Avoiding animal products and eating a plant-based diet is a great way to keep type 2 diabetes under control, according to a study published October 30, 2018, in BMJ Open Diabetes Research and Care. Researchers reviewed 11 studies, most of them randomized controlled trials, the gold standard in research, that included more than 400 mostly middle-aged people with type 2 diabetes. The average length of each study was about 6 months. People who followed a plant-based diet experienced significant improvements in blood sugar control, emotional health, quality of life, weight loss, and cholesterol levels compared with people who did not follow plant-based diets. Some people who ate a plant-based diet were even able to reduce or eliminate their medications for diabetes control and high blood pressure. If you'd like to try the diet at home, focus on lots of vegetables, legumes, a must for protein and fiber, fruits, seeds, whole grains, and nuts. But don't stop taking any medications without talking to your doctor first. New physical activity guidelines. Even a little activity will help health. An update to the physical activity guidelines for Americans may motivate you to move a little more. The guidelines published online November 12, 2018 by JAMA uphold previous recommendations from 2008 that urged at least 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity activity such as brisk walking. But the new guidelines break from the old rule that physical activity has to be accumulated in bouts of at least 10 minutes to count toward your weekly total. Now, the evidence shows it doesn't matter how long an exercise session lasts. It's the total volume of activity that counts, even if it's short in short bursts. That means you can jog to your mailbox, do jumping jacks during TV commercials, or skip to your car in the parking lot. Any bursts of activity that get your heart and lungs pumping will count toward the weekly goal, and they will contribute to enhanced health. Note, it's safer for your heart and better for your muscles if you warm up with a few minutes of marching in place or walking before breaking a sweat. The evidence about the health benefits of regular physical activity is well established and includes lowering your risk for developing heart disease, stroke, dementia, depression, type 2 diabetes, and many kinds of cancer. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.